Ahoy, ahoy, everybody. Welcome to Talking Simpsons, where we hate life and ourselves. I'm your host, the Elephant Fresh, Bob Mackey, and this is the Laser Time Podcast Network's chronological exploration of The Simpsons. Who else is here with me today?
Henry Gilbert, and don't praise the machine.
And who else?
Mr. Cleanser, Chris Antista.
Awesome. And today's episode is Bart Gets an Elephant.
Stop remembering TV and get back to work.
But no, that's all we do. Yeah, we'll never stop doing that, Marge.
Come on, Marge.
And what a thing to say. I want to say up front, this is my favorite episode of all time.
All time? All time. Wow, holy cow.
This is the top 10 for me.
I had an inkling of that when we started doing this, and I remember I recorded this. I downloaded a torrent to get the episode so I wouldn't fuck over the people anymore by playing the syndicated versions.
They demand those cuts.
I accidentally did this the first episode of the fifth season because alphabetically, according to my torrent, this is the first episode. So then I watched it again. I'm like, no, I'm very comfortable now having watched it three times recently, knowing that I'd say this by the time we got to it. This is my favorite episode of
all time. It is great. And also, it aired on March 31st, 1994. And Chris will tell us what happened on this mythical day in real life history.
Ah, John Grisham's The Client is on the top of the bestseller lists. Mariah Carey's Without You dominates the charts, and the Mighty Ducks are back in D2, Judgment Day.
Wow. Judgment Day? I thought it was Cruise Control.
It's just the Mighty Ducks.
I remember Mighty Ducks, too, that they had to. It's the classic second sports movie thing where they have to, like, up the problems, and then also, actually, the story of Wild Thing in the second major league and the story of Emilio Estevez in Mighty Ducks 2 are both
the
same.
That is bizarre. The brothers doing the same film?
Yeah, they both got fancier and yuppier, and they slicked back their hair. They're like, oh, I'm a business
You've
guy.
You've changed, man.
So was Emilio still on board for D2?
Yes.
Did he leave for D3?
He's in D3, but not the main star anymore.
I mean, he's
anymore.
Still not... He's in half of D2. The kids really take over in D2. Oh,
I really miss Emilio. He had a nice nice time in the
sun.
Seems
like he's secretly awesome.
He at least seems like he has dealt with stardom better than Charlie Sheen, who shockingly isn't dead. I wish him well. I am not wishing... Let me tell you, listeners, I am not wishing death upon Charlie Sheen. Oh, the opposite. I hope he lives forever.
And he treats women so well.
Fun fact about Charlie Sheen, the first word he ever said on film is drugs.
Ferris Bueller, right? Mm-hmm. That's a great role for him. This episode is, as Chris said, it's great. It's a super gag-driven episode. Two of the best like creative forces working together. Writer John Swartzwelder and director Jim Reardon. What has John Swartzwelder done before? He has done, help me, I'm drawing a blank here.
Call of the Simpsons.
Call of the Simpsons, right.
And, this season he did Rosebud.
That's right.
And he's the most prolific Simpsons writer. He has written, I think, now Matt Selman, I think, is past him.
Because John Swartzwelder eventually left to write books, and they're all great.
The John Swartzwelder wrote 68 episodes of The Simpsons back when that meant something.
Like, is it still one of the most... the most by a credited writer, a single credited writer?
I believe he's behind Matt Selman now, but he's done that.
But after Matt Selman came back to the show.
He never left. He's been there for like 14 years now. He's had a longer tenure than old John Swartzwelder. He did The Cartridge Family. Mm-hmm. He did Whacking Day, I believe.
Dog of Death.
He's done all the, he's done most of the animal related ones.
And I guess that's the most fun thing about it. It's a very grounded episode outside of the elephant. Somehow makes the idea of getting an elephant real grounded. It instantly brings the reality.
It reminds me similarly to how they dealt with Deep Space Hummer, which is, this is a crazy idea. Let's ground this as much as possible. And so the reality of like, well, what would having an elephant in your backyard actually be? I mean, there are absolutely scenes that completely break reality and are just a cartoon. But there's other ones of like, no, an elephant would do that and it would destroy things.
And for me, it's perfect Homer because the episode should be about Bart. But it's not about Homer, but he's in every scene. He's an idiot. Constantly gagging.
There are great Homer lines.
Like getting wee giddily thrown out of a radio station. He appears for no reason. It makes every scene better.
And this is very much like David Merkin taking a formula like A Boy and His Dog. Like, you know how animals do not behave like animals on TV shows or movies. This animal behaves very much like an animal, a non-domesticated animal who doesn't give a shit about what you want from him.
And that's another thing. It's just a perfect thing you can only do in a cartoon.
Yeah.
But it doesn't... It, I guess if you had a trained elephant and could afford it for an entire shoot, you could do this on Home Improvement.
But you couldn't get it to pull you into its mouth, nor would you want to.
You'd maybe get the elephant for one scene. Mm-hmm. Like, Home Improvement would do stunts like that. Like, he'd be in a tank, or he'd a snake would climb on him. So they do stunts like that. But they couldn't. It wouldn't be the full episode.
I'll tell you every time we stumble upon line of the show, because it happens like 9 times for me.
Oh, yeah. I've got several thousand lines of the show.
I have quite a lot of clips here. The episode begins with a very grounded thing of a filthy house. The Simpsons house has never looked this bad, though, you know, in my house, a little dirty, too. My current apartment.
Are you still living in the Marvel comic book apocalypse of your broken shelf?
I picked up those, but I don't know. I need to take the underpants out of my fridge.
Yeah,
but,
what were those doing there?
you know, you just take them off. It's hot, but yes. Marge is not happy with how dirty the house is. Oh, I did also, the Homer bowling ball, for a second, I was like, oh, is this the same Homer ball from Life in the Fast Lane?
I didn't see a liquid setter.
Was that Charlene?
No. The Life in the Fast Lane was when Marge was given the ball that said Homer on for her birthday. But that was a blue bowling ball. This is a black
one. Charlene was the name of the putter, not the ball. I apologize. I'm quitting.
I'll show you
shame.
Charlene in the Bob. Also, when she makes them breakfast, I thought it was so weird that they it's like they're throwing the waffles over their shoulders, you know?
It was like, a weird bit of animation, but there were like pieces of pizza stuck to the ceiling, so maybe that's just how they eat sometimes.
There's footprints on the ceiling.
Whatever lands in their mouths, they eat.
Also, when they come in, I love that Homer also says, hey, Mom.
Yeah.
Homer is one of the children in this episode. Mm-hmm. Like, he is rarely the dad, but they may have plans for today, including trying to find a Martian or drinking in a drinking contest.
Playing in a little, what's it called again? The Little White Girls Blues Quartet?
Yes.
There you go.
But Marge has other plans.
Well, gotta go.
Me too.
It's hard for us to leave when you're standing there, Mom.
Wish you don't, son.
No one's going anywhere. We're going to clean the whole house from top to bottom.
Oh, dear God, no!
Push her down, son.
Push her down. It's just so simple, like, well, push her down. Push your mother down.
She's in the way.
And I actually have another, one last Simpsons anecdote from my youth that I haven't said yet.
Oh, boy.
And I don't want to get too long on it.
Did you push your mother down?
No.
Okay.
No, but I felt a lot of it was from this episode. And it's really weird to talk about, but like I got kicked out of a bunch of schools, and I got pushed into this small private school after I was out of schools.
To be kicked out of?
Yes, after all the public schools would not take me anymore. And I'm in this little school, and I just decided to be cool and teenage. For a whole year, I didn't talk. I didn't talk at all.
Were you a teenager or emulating teenagers?
I was a teenager. Okay. I was a huge dick. There's people who I still see from there who like remember it. It's still embarrassing. I just didn't talk unless I was forced to.
I would call it a social experiment, Chris. That covers it up a lot better.
And the school was so small, I got over it the next year, and I started speaking to people again. And I didn't remember at the time, but people would look at me like I was really weird. I spoke in Homerisms. And a lot of Homerisms of like, I can't really describe it or do the impression well enough of like, and then I talk like this all of the time. And everything I said sounded like the way Homer sounds to me in this episode. And there was a good 3 months. I'm like, why? I'm talking now. Why is everybody treating me so strangely? And it was just a real weird memory that was awoken within me in this.
Just hearing the push her down, son.
Push her down. The calm Homer. The calm
very
Homer.
Calm, matter of fact Homer.
I talked like that for a full semester and didn't really care what people thought of me, but everybody looked at me really weird. It's hard talk. I've never talked about this
in my life.
I never
heard about this,
And I don't know. I don't have anything else to say about it.
Thank you for sharing that.
But it's just such a weird memory. Maybe that's why this episode stuck with me so much. I don't know.
But I also like that Marge locked the door and seemingly that will prevent them from ever leaving. It's a very Bond villain line of, I think you'll find that escape is impossible.
She's kind of shot from underneath with like her arms crossed.
Yes.
And a shadow cast over her. It's great.
Yeah, a very well laid out episode as well.
Yeah, Jim Reardon's bringing it.
Reardon does an amazing job. Reardon's one of the best. But I get this joke mixed up with the one from the Christmas episode where Bart is trying to run away and Marge's like, you can't get away from me. I spent 23 hours a day here, and then Homer blocks Bart's exit. I was like, I get those two Bart trying to escape jokes.
Only Homer is not colluding with Marge this time.
Homer, well, because Homer, again, is one of the kids, and so when they're trying to share their spot responsibilities and take a room.
Now each one of you take a floor and get started.
I call the basement.
Fine.
Dough? Dough!
I love the flexibility of the dough there. When Homer offers up the basement, they're like, okay. He's like, dough?
He's not sure if it should be mad or not.
Yeah, and then he realizes very soon he should be mad. I was definitely Bart being forced to clean. He was just like, can't we just move? I don't want this. I'll live in filth. I don't want to clean. That... He recognizes Tennessee Ernie Ford on the radio and knows that it's Ernie. He's like, you're telling me, Ernie.
He's a very worldly child. Should we get into the song? I mean, we do have to explore the history of everything the Simpsons references. So the original version of the song, the one we hear is 1955, Ernie Ford's version. Tennessee Ernie Ford.
Did Bill and Marty say...
from Tennessee, I should add.
Did Bill and Marty say the wrong song name?
No. They don't name that song in the next scene. Okay. They say it's Take This Job and Shove It, but it is the end of 16 Tons.
But the original version is from 1946, performed by Merle Travis. And I feel like this is more authentic. It comes from his family's crushing experiences in coal mining. That 16 Tons line is from his brother, like, writing home to him. Mm-hmm. And I think his father was like, I can't die. I owe my soul to the company store. Like,
it's like, I am too in debt to be dead.
Yeah.
Here's the original.
You load 16 tons, and what do you get? You get another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
That's like a spoken word section here.
Yes, sir, there's a menu, Kentucky coal miner that pert near owes his soul.
And a bit about Amway.
So, that is not as, like, the finger snaps aren't there, the voice is not as appealing, but it's more authentic to this guy's life experience.
I still don't know. What is 16 tons?
Load 16 tons of coal, and all you get is older and more in debt.
He's talking about the Kentucky coal mines.
Yeah.
And
the jobs that are coming back.
Yeah. Well, that was a popular song in the 40s, but I think it's no coincidence that the Ernie one is more popular because it still covers the misery of working till you're dead.
Yeah.
But... it's a little snappier, literally snappier, in that he is snapping the whole time through the song.
And it's not so much a folk rock activism as it is, like, doesn't working suck?
It's more just, it takes out some of the activist nature of it. But I knew that song because it was on my DTV VHS in the mid-80s.
Oh my God.
Disney was ready to repurpose classic cartoons by pairing them with hit songs.
Capitalism sucks, kids.
It's not, I need to find them again. My hard drive crashed. I had the Hanna-Barbera version, which
I
was even worse.
Too. Those were worse, yes.
Hanna-Barbera Rocks, I believe they were called.
Well, because the Hanna-Barbera ones, I remember being confused because they had things I'd never seen. Mm-hmm. Like, if they had a Donald cartoon, I was like, I probably have seen this, or it's a Donald cartoon like any other. But when they had clips of Yogi Bear's movie, it's set to I'll Be Watching You,
it's insane.
I was just like, what is this? Where's this from? What cartoon could this be from of the Hanna-Barbera?
It's Hey There, it's Yogi Bear from 1964. Holy shit, I've done this too long.
Yes, so in case you don't know, the company storyline is reference to, not the book, but the book explains it a lot. Read The Grapes of Wrath. You'll get an understanding of what this culture was like, where it's like, oh, come work for us, live in our camp. You won't get paid in money. We'll pay you in scrip, and you can buy things at our store, like food and things you need to live. Only we'll overcharge you and underpay you. So you get Krusty Land fun bucks for working. God. Yeah.
You make less than a livable wage, and like, well, it sounds like you better work more if you want to make those pancakes.
I just want to say, before I forget, I feel remarkably fortunate. I know someone from my peer group named Merle.
Uh-huh. And it makes cousin Merle, really?
It makes me astonishingly happy to know that he's Asian. Like, what was happening in Florida?
The Donald cartoon they adapted was Donald's Gold Mine, if you want to look
Donald's
that one up.
Donald's Gold Mine.
If you need a bunch of footage of him with mine carts and getting 16 tons of things.
It's why we're all so obsessed with cartoons is because the animation of the 1940s to the 1960s, some of it was able to hold up in the face of modern animation. It was so bad until around the realm of The Simpsons. So they'd repurpose it and package it in shitty ways, like Hanna-Barbera Rocks and DTV, the worst is Blam.
Does Blam still exist?
No, but
can you,
like,
explain what Blam is to our listeners?
Blam! It was a really awful...
It was like turning old cartoons into fail videos.
Into, like, well, it's a bad reference, but MXC... Because which was like the Red Bull version of America's Funniest Home Videos. Oh, man, I hope this asshole doesn't get hit by a train. Whoops-a-daisy. Bang, bang, bang. Hanna-Barbera sound effects. Oh, fuck, he sure did. And like that's
he's dead now.
And but it was that with
boner.
Old Disney cartoons. But I do know the reason those cartoons have been restored in HD and not even released is because of Blam.
Thank you, Blam.
To repurpose them for television for Blam, they were restored, and we have yet to be able to buy them or watch them yet. But back in the day, they licensed popular music and recut old Yogi Bear, Donald Duck cartoons to popular music to sell them again to people because there was no YouTube and what were we going to do?
And as a kid, finding out the idea of a company store and having my mom explain what soul-crushing debt was, God. I was like, boy, this is depressing. As a kid, I didn't know what depression was. I mean, it was creeping around the corners.
Well, just like Woody Guthrie, I'm pretty sure Merle, whatever his name was, was an activist using folk rock to kind of, not folk rock, sorry,
Merle
folk
Travis.
Songs, Merle
yes.
Travis, to spread his message of why capitalism sucks.
Just talking. I didn't mean don't vote Republican.
And well, speaking of cartoons, Homer has very cartoon logic that a leaf blower will clean up his thing. Like, I love, it's one of those millions of jokes they have in The Simpsons of just like, if he was in a Daffy cartoon, using a leaf blower would send all the trash out the window.
It's how Woody Woodpecker would clean something.
Exactly.
I mean, leaf blowers makes no sense to me in real practice either. Just like,
it is
what?
Shuffling filth around.
Yeah.
And being the loudest anything could be just to move, because a rake would be boring. And you'd have to move your elbows more.
I don't own a home. I don't do yard maintenance anymore because I grew up doing that shit.
Oh, me too, yeah.
But I don't understand the leaf blower because usually, like, blow the leaves off the driveway. Like, to have your driveway pretty? Who gives a shit?
What if the neighbors see it?
Drive over the leaves at 1 mile an hour.
And as somebody who could never throw away a calendar, I am definitely touched by this line.
All done.
You're not done. I want you to throw away these old calendars and TV guides.
Are you mad, woman? You never know when an old calendar might come in handy. Sure, it's not 1985 right now, but who knows what tomorrow will bring. And these TV guides, so many memories. Gomer upset Sergeant Carter. Oh, I'll never forget that episode.
Pyle!
Shazam!
Pyle!
Shazam!
Pyle!
Shazam!
Shazam.
Stop remembering TV and get back to work.
What's the point of all this cleaning? Are we so vain?
Man, you can really just feel the acoustics in that room Dan was in. Yes. At this point in the show, we're hearing a lot of Homer just screaming at the top of his lungs. I think they really loved hearing Dan do this.
I hope Dan enjoyed it, but it was so great of just Homer making pronouncements at the top of his lungs, like, are we so vain? And I did hate throwing out calendars because it's just like, but the calendars look so cool.
There's so many cool pictures.
I do have
there.
A 1989 ALF calendar on the wall over there because it is astonishing.
Well, after a certain amount of time, the years line up again, you can reuse them. I think it's like 17 years. I forget what it is.
I wrote in the Melmac holidays.
But yeah, I think also too was that I was raised, my mom loves calendars. She loves them more than me. I can't start the year without at least my Simpsons calendar and maybe one more calendar. My mom buys a calendar for every room of the house so she could see.
Terrible idea.
You always know what day it is.
And it's a cool way to just have art up on the wall.
And that's what I realized when my girlfriend bought a Studio Ghibli calendar and it allowed you to slot in, you know, whatever picture to any month you wanted. And we got to figure that out for ourselves. There's 16 things to choose from. And it just occurred to me like, yeah, this is the only commercial mainstream way anybody sells you art. Like if you just want, like there's either the shitty Walmart poster or you could find the thing that you like that has a calendar and you can look at a different gorgeous
different
picture of it
month,
every day, every month.
So you have to tell the kids about Gomer Pyle.
Well, I knew that was going to happen. I just want to say this is the joke I've accepted not having any frame of reference for.
Well, first off,
I'm so glad you're going to get into it.
I like the stance that you would never keep a TV guide, though I also would keep those for a while, but that TV guide could never explain, they would poorly explain what an episode's plot is to you. And then second, I think this is how The Simpsons thought people remember all TV, which is the 5 seconds of a show they ever saw. And this show is in opposition of that. This proves that TV is always remembered. But yes Bob, explain Gomer Pyle to us.
I think we went over it before. A lot of listeners like my description of him as an ambiguously gay rube in the Army. The name of the show was Gomer Pyle USMC. It aired from 64 to 69 and is a spinoff of the Andy Griffith Show.
Yes.
And here's the thing. I haven't watched it in 25 years, probably.
I've never seen this.
And I said he was ambiguously gay in my description at first. That's wrong. He is so gay in this show, and that's fine.
But it's so gay.
If you were this gay in 1964 in the army, you would have been murdered.
Yeah, they did. But, yeah.
But I was watching clips, and it was like, golly, Sergeant Carter, I didn't know it was bayonet practice today. That's what he sounds like. I mean, watch.
Well, everybody just thought he was a dandy back then. They're like, oh, what a dandy. I'm sure his wife loves it.
They had different words for it. But so Shazam was his catchphrase in the show when he was like, surprise, and golly.
Become a superhero.
Yes, he became Super Gomer. But Jim Nabors would eventually be known more for his singing career. And it all started with a song about the word Shazam, which was a novelty record sung by Jim Nabors.
Holy shit.
And he would eventually become like a spiritual song singer, like sing great spiritual hits.
I don't associate the name Jim Nabors with Gomer Pyle, so yeah, I'm fascinated to hear. I get to learn here.
I've never heard this novelty song before either.
Went to see a gypsy woman late last night. Told her everything I do, it never works out right. I gave her all my money, nearly 40 11 cents. She said you need a magic word to give you confidence. Just say Shazam. Zip zap, man, you gotta put a whammy on. You can move the world or walk into the Pentagon. No one's ever heard that special secret word. So if you want your way, just remember what to say.
Shazam.
Shazam.
I don't know what's wrong with me, but I like that song.
That song's fun.
You can walk into the Pentagon if you say Shazam. Trust Gomer Pyle.
The Pentagon.
Yeah.
This predates the show?
No, it's 65. No. The show's 64. So this was in the middle of Gomer Pyle madness in America.
Vietnam really hurt that show, too.
Shazam.
That it was still going on as Vietnam. I was like, well, these Marines are going to get sent to Nam at some point. This is, but the, I just fucking, yeah, I love that anything could be a novelty song back then. Like, this is a line in a show.
Yeah.
And the, yeah,
Jim Nabors sell 500,000 records.
And the Jim Nabors did just become a singer after the show ended, and he would, like, for the longest time, he sang, he's a son of Indiana, and so at the Indianapolis 500, sing some song at the start of it, let's say the National Anthem, and that he would also, he would bring his boyfriend there, but they just never talked. It was just one of those things like,
that's
not
my
talk
manager.
About. Yeah.
I think he came out in his 80s, almost kind of recently.
Yes, everybody knew that there's a classic, I can't explain the whole thing, but look up Jim Nabors marries Rock Hudson. It's a very old story in gay Hollywood. But the point is, he was in the closet, but everybody knew. But it's kind of like Barry Manilow, but it's also like, he comes from such a different time. I don't begrudge him being in the closet
at all.
Oh,
no, no.
Like,
I mean, you have to deal with a lot of things.
Same with George Takei.
We were watching something and Paul Lynde came on. I'm like, really? Nobody knew? Or they just didn't care.
I think the thing is, a lot of people didn't know what gay was because they were protected from it on purpose, which is why when you talk about like
just
teaching...
Maybe the fucking catchphrase of the 1950s, just don't give it another thought.
Basically, I mean, that kind of falls through to today where people are like, don't teach my kids. I don't know. I don't want them to know about what gayness is because they might become gay.
I grew up when a mainstream preacher would call that a children's show puppet as gay. So it's very hard to imagine.
Yeah.
Don't watch Teletubbies because that one might be gay.
Well, I think the feeling in the 60s probably was just like, you just don't talk about that. Mm-hmm. Those are the dirty people in their sex clubs and the police will deal with them. It was in the 70s of more of the gay liberation movement of people just being out and proud, not in secret and shame. That was the gay pride movement, was born out of that, of being like, we're not ashamed anymore. Obviously the arts will attract people who are different, and that includes gay people. Mm-hmm. And there were tons of people who just had to be in the closet, even though part of their appeal is can't not be tied to their queerness. You know?
Half of 1970s game shows are just gay jokes.
Yeah.
And the public seem to eat them up, I don't get it.
When Paul Lynde is saying, like, send Burt Reynolds over to my place, like, everybody knows, everybody should know what he's saying. Yeah. But
it's all unspoken.
Though I remember Bobcat Goldthwait had this great joke about it, how he said that all these families go to Las Vegas and see Cirque du Soleil shows, which could not be queerer, and that they could even see two Cirque Soleil performers, like two men, kiss each other at the end of their, like, oh, what good friends they are. They're good buddies.
It's actually one of my favorite more modern Simpsons jokes, like Homer being danced in the face by
Cirque. Oh, yeah, that's great. Remember, before you say Shazam, put a whammy on it.
Yeah.
That's what
By the way, She didn't invent the word Shazam. Shazam, at the very least, first appeared in Captain Marvel's first appearance in Wiz Comics number one. And Shazam is the word said by Captain Marvel to transform young Billy Batson into the powerful Captain Marvel, who was the second most powerful character
also,
Superman back then.
More importantly, Gypsy is not PC, which shows what a rube Gomer Pyle actually is. He hasn't been informed yet.
Man, Jim Neighbors is still alive. We need to. We better protest his house.
Is he really?
He's actually, I've said this the previous time we talked about Jim Neighbors on the show, but
he
is alive in part because he got a liver transplant that was found for him by his good friend Carol Burnett.
Aw, and they're all buds. We get one Clinton joke, though.
Yeah, boy.
The second appearance of Clinton in the flesh.
Yes, Clinton.
In Springfield.
It shows you what the joke of Clinton was then, of like, Clinton jokes in 94 were either fat jokes or he's lazy. Mm-hmm.
And it was like Hillary's actually doing all the work.
Or always holding a saxophone. It is forever imprinted in Animaniac's opening.
Because he was on Arsenio
once
during that.
Playing the saxophone.
Look, it is silly political theater, but when you're used to boring old dudes, a guy playing an Elvis song on a saxophone feels inventive. Yeah. Especially when he's competing against an old man who married his grandmother. Like, it looks pretty cool.
I remember a president who used to reference Jay-Z songs back in the day. Seems like 1,000 years ago.
Boy, does it. But Schwartzwelder was not a fan of Clinton, as Al Jean talked about on commentaries, that he was basically the troll of the writer's room, saying like, they're going to take him out of town in a noose. And then all the other liberal writers are like, no, he's not. He's Clinton's good.
I like to imagine the backstory of this joke. Mo found out Clinton was in town playing with the White Girls Blues Quartet.
Yes.
He had Barney drive him around so he could yell out the window, get back to work.
You know, that is also something. Why of all the people Mo could get to drive him, Barney would be the last person that want to do that. But
they just wanted Mo to scream it, but they didn't know who should drive. Of course it would be Barney.
But
why
also
not?
Mo has no friends, so only Barney would drive him.
And the person who cared the most about what presidents did on their weekends is currently president.
He's golfing up a storm. God bless him.
They are being very mean to Trump now in the current online cartoons.
Oh, those are bad. I hate those.
But they were real mean to Clinton. Not real mean, but they were mean to Clinton. Like, he literally looks at the camera in one episode and says, I'm a pretty crappy president.
And in one episode, he has sex with real, honest, no fooling pigs. Yeah. They say he fucks pigs.
Yes. So they do all that with him, but then when it's... Not to say they didn't make fun of Republicans that time, but did you ever see W on The Simpsons during his thing? They didn't directly make fun of W.
I'm sure I said
George
this before
w. Bush.
On an episode, but Al Jean in a commentary said, well, you know, people were always up and down about if they liked him or not, so we weren't sure if it was okay. But my answer is no, it doesn't matter what people think. You're The Simpsons. Do what you want like you always do.
Or always did.
I just don't think there was a lot of comedy to mine. His administration was hilarious. I think that was where the funny stuff was. I think there's Dick Cheney jokes in The Simpsons.
There are. They did make fun of Cheney, but they never touched George W. that often.
He was
if
just
ever
a slack-jawed simpleton.
They could make so many good jokes about slack-jawed yokels.
Oliver Stone could have made a better movie with it.
That's true.
Okay, so
back to the show.
Whenever I do clean, whenever I rarely clean up things, and look at cleaning products, I do think of getting doped up by them and losing my mind.
Help but think of the awful movie Food Fight, which we did. Henry and I worked on a Laser Time article about animated product placement in animation, which is it hasn't happened a lot.
That
we
is
got
a
everything
great
we could
hate
think
watch.
Of. But Food Fight being the Roger Rabbit of products.
If Roger Rabbit was animated like a PlayStation 1 cutscene, yes.
But Mr. Clean is there in that movie, and that's all I could think of.
And Jemima, Twinkie, the kid,
the Vlasic Pelican.
Vlasic Pickles.
I'm a Vlasic Pickle guy. Groucho Marx at all.
He was Groucho Marx.
And making all those deals, I think, is the only reason it had to come out, but it may be one of the worst animated things that has ever been officially released by someone.
And from people who make movies, the best excuse for why it sucks, he literally accused someone of sabotage. They stole our better movie.
The dog ate my movie.
It deserved to be stolen and dipped in acid.
And again, Charlie Sheen.
And this
Charlie Sheen
and Miley
is the
Cyrus
voice.
Is in it too.
No, it's not Miley Cyrus. It's the Disney star before
Mandy
her. No, the one
oh,
on
Hillary Duff.
Yeah, Hillary Duff.
Oh, it's Hillary Duff. Yeah, I forget they're interchangeable.
But. So Homer gets high right after Marge gets high, like the episode after Marge gets high and Homer loves Flanders. Mm-hmm. Now Homer's getting high off of fumes. I have had that reaction too of reading a thing that's like, well, the sell-by date's now. Eh, shove it. I'm eating this. Like, so,
I did that with mayonnaise recently, and
I still can't
get over it.
I haven't done that after 32. Boy, this chicken, it should still be good. Mm-hmm. I don't want to waste it. No, after I finished making, I was like, nah, I'm going to throw this out. I'll just be paranoid about it all night.
It's easier to do if you don't eat meat. Less things will kill you.
Yeah, all right. Now, this is the propaganda I don't like, Bob.
I'm trichinosis free since 1983.
But Homer is freaking out, and I love it. I love Marge's reaction.
I must destroy you.
Homer, what's going on down there?
Nothing.
Then stop screaming so loud.
Okay.
So that is definitely David Silverman animation. You could tell because their version of Mr. Clean, when Marge yells at Homer and the rest of the mascots, he's like errantly like rubbing his finger on his knee like shyly. Whenever there's finger acting, it's always David Silverman. We should say these mascots came off the products into life. So we have these scrubbing bubbles known as Bubble Off in the show, the turtle from Terrapin Wax, and Mr. Cleanser, who is Mr. Clean. There's one guy... This night, they don't even bother giving the product a clever name. It's just Cleanser. And I'm sure it comes from somewhere. I tried to look it up. I don't recognize the logo.
No, I feel like that's like an old
Lux
one for,
soap.
Like, for Ajax or something.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
an old... A very old cleaning
one of those names
thing
I never
caused
see
cancer back
unless
then.
I'm downloading a giant file of old radio shows.
I'm sure it's in one of the 9,000 cartoons for the 40s or 30s where product logos come to life and do things at night. You know, there's like that with like books and food and things.
I love Dan's acting of yelling quiet or like, but then and the Marge's reaction is so great. She's like, she has genuine concern, and then Homer's like, nothing, and he's like, then stop screaming so loud if it's nothing. He's like. Okay. And just his lesser acting too of struggling less.
That all the animated hallucinations seem to agree, like they're on board with.
They all want to kill him.
Like, well, they're playing it down. They're not screaming anymore either.
The Simpsons will be right back.
Hey, this is Hank Azaria. You're listening to Talking Simpsons on Laser Time. I didn't know that was a thing.
That American Gothic joke doesn't make much sense, really, unless they actually
I meant to look that up.
I looked it up. I mean, they have what you would think is a print of American Gothic in their home, but Bart is absentmindedly cleaning while listening to the radio.
There's great animation of that paint smearing. Yes. It's like a great effect.
So he is removing paint from what is, I guess, a painting of that. And then when it says, it's a cute joke, but it would imply that the Simpsons have the original painting.
So Grant Wood, it says, if you're reading this, you scrub too hard.
You scrub
Grant
too
Wood
hard.
Is the
Grant
artist
Wood.
Of American
Grant Wood
Gothic.
Is the original artist of American
painting from 1930.
I meant to look that up.
And American Gothic, obviously the classic
FX show
of a man and a woman on a farm, an older man, an older woman with a pitchfork, and it's like, this is Americana of the 30s.
It's harder to Google now that show exists, Chris. You're right. That's the first 19 hits.
Is there American Gothic show?
There's a show, yeah.
Yeah.
You're thinking of American Horror Story and Gotham.
Oh. Honestly, there are so many TV shows that if you just say a phrase that's somewhat known, like if you said The Mick, you'd be like, hey, that's a racial story. Like, no, that's a show.
Or that if you Google American Crime, you might not find American Crime Story.
Nope,
two shows that are, we're on the air.
There's too much TV, but I do like that in Springfield, even in this episode, the radio knows the exact worst song for you to hear at any moment, like that fits a thing. And this is really where we get into Bill and Marty, who have been great characters in the show, but we had seen them before, like they were in the Spinal Tap episode. Mm-hmm. You see them on screen interviewing Spinal Tap. Rock-a-doodle-doo, you're listening to Bill and Marty.
Love Bill and Marty so
but
much.
I think Bill and Marty normally are just a great excuse to have Harry and Dan riff with each other. I wonder how much of their stuff gets written.
What does that mean?
Which one is the stupider one? Is it Bill or Marty? It's the guy without the non-balding guy. Is that Bill or Marty?
I think that's Marty.
Because I want to say this characterization was played up also in I Love Lisa. I'm not sure if they kept the characters the same in terms of their dynamic.
No, yes,
but,
totally the
but
same.
One was denser.
He was the one. It was Harry's voice who was Marty who kept playing the... that you're dead weight, Marty. Yeah. Like that's, so that it's Bill who would say that, and that is the bald one, Dan. Yeah. And yeah, and so he was the one who kept playing, like, doggone it, like doggone just playing it. Monster Mash.
Let me hear some Bill and Marty.
All right, so Bill and Marty is doing, they're doing a contest that doesn't really make sense. That they call you instead of making you call them, they call you for a contest, and Bart's trying to win, so he first gets Grandpa, who's having heart palpitation, and Bart hangs up on him, so he's dead.
Then no more Grandpa on The Simpsons.
Why would Grandpa call his family's home in case of emergency?
I mean, he's confused. He's, and then there's a great bit where Bart is eating the chocolate ice cream out of the Neapolitan ice cream, a great callback to Radio Bart, where Homer is trying to get the chocolate ice cream out of Neapolitan stuff, and then KBBL, they first call the cops, and it doesn't work.
No. A little to the left.
I love this show.
That's the stuff.
Oh, I'm sorry. The phrase is, KBBL is going to give me something stupid.
Pretty weird.
Let's try one more number.
Yellow.
KBBL is going to give me something stupid.
Well, hot dog, we have a wiener.
Yellow.
I won!
You win your choice of $10,000, or what's our gag price this week, Bill? A full-grown African elephant!
Well, all that money sounds mighty tempting, Marty, but I think I'm going to have to go with the elephant.
He's taking the elephant instead of the money.
I love that just deadpan read of what's happening. I think of game shows like Let's Make a Deal, where you choose a door and there's a donkey behind it. You don't get that donkey. That belongs to the TV station.
Yeah, it's all very... Well,
you get a donkey voucher.
I would bet you sign a contract when you enter into the studio that at least says you don't really get that prize.
Yeah. And we also live in a world where you know now, I think thanks to that Oprah incident where she gave everyone gets a car, where like everyone, so I got a car and I got a giant tax bill and a registration bill for this thing I didn't want or know I was getting.
I mean, you can still sell that car.
No, I think people, it changed the way prizes were given. Yeah. Like there's like a waiver you have to sign in order to be get into an entry. You couldn't be just be cold called.
Well, I found this out about Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, that so that it is actually true that when you win, you become a millionaire. They don't actually give you $1 million. They give you $1 million plus whatever the tax amount would be.
Oh,
so that you would have $1 million after taxes. Whoa. So they literally do like, no, the name of the game is real.
Huh.
You do become a millionaire. So you get more than $1 million, just the after tax.
Final anecdote.
So, one thing before we move on. I've been watching these episodes lately with headphones on. I'm picking up a lot of things I miss without wearing headphones.
It's bizarre.
It is.
There's still some sound stuff you can miss if you're right. Like, from capturing the sounds, I've noticed that all over. Like, audio jokes I never picked up on.
And I'm seeing a lot of, like, intentionality behind these sound effects. So, in the scene preceding this one where they get done cleaning the house and Marge is like, isn't it so great our house is clean? And the door swings back and forth and the kitchen's immediately trashed.
So great.
You can hear birds chirping in the background. It's daytime. In this scene, you purposely hear crickets chirping to show you the passage of time. We don't need that in any way. It's not important that this scene takes place at night, but it's there because someone thought, like, let's make this a nighttime scene, add the sound effect. So and you can hear it in the background of that clip too.
Totally. I felt bad for Marge that the place gets dirty that fast again, but that is how it is with cleaning, it feels like to me.
Yeah.
I really got in touch with this episode too as a kid, because when I was 10, we moved to a new city. It was my first move, and when I was 8, and it was hard for me. Like, I lost all my friends. I had to make new friends, and I'm not great at making friends.
Yeah, I moved when I was 9, had a similar experience.
And so I got obsessed with the local oldie station and would listen to it all the time. And my Bill and Marty were Randy and Spiff. They were working in Atlanta. They were at the top oldie station in Atlanta until 2006, at a point when the oldie station, it was no longer profitable. So
Was it closed for retooling?
Then they got shifted over to a news station, but they're like, no, you're the morning radio goofballs.
I don't know if folks will have those anecdotes growing up, but that was, my parents wouldn't let me have a TV, so I grew up my whole life listening to Bill and Marty's. Spent the other half of my life making fun of people like Bill and Marty's. But it's out of genuine affection. Like, I think that's why I love them so much.
Yeah, I listen to them all the time.
And you listen to the radio, and sometimes you just hear a format change. That was Juvenile will back that ass up. Like, that guy was not hired for this station.
No, but his contract's still going. And so, I mean, and it was kind of a ritual then of listening to it on the way to school. Yeah. Like, it was the morning radio that could be drive time or it could be kids in on the way to school or the way back from school. And that Randy and Spiff were so big that in the Georgia Dome, which is a huge place where they play the football in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Every year, Randy and Spiff would have an oldies concert where they'd bring back in the 90s, in the early 90s, these stars of the 50s and 60s to sing a few of their songs. They're like, it's Herman and the Hermits. They're going to play this live. And then Chubby Checker was amazing. Like, Chubby Checker, he only did it for like 10 minutes, but he had so much energy that they had to go like, can you believe it, Chubby Checker? Oh, my God. Like, so
different day.
I love that. And it was Fox was the name of the radio station. And I went to several like openings of an Ace Hardware or whatever just to go there to get prizes. Like, I got a Fox Frisbee at this one. I got a Fox keychain. Oh, boy.
I touched Spiff.
I thought the radio was way bigger than it was. I won a ton of stuff off the radio because I was always adamant about paying attention when you needed to call and the secret, the phrase that pays. And I went to Warped Tour like from 1996 to like 2001. I have never paid for a ticket. I won them off the radio every single time, as did at least six of my friends, because we made it a point to call into the radio station.
My mom also, she won several things from the radio. It's tons of fun, and now I do sound like an old man talking about, in my day, the radio, we called it.
Oh, I can place it. I called in and won. I'm like, what do I win? Like a CD we're giving away, and like, which one? It was fucking Crazy Town Butterfly with like a hole punched through it, so I can't take it back. Come, my lady.
Though then again, like us calling into radio station, being obsessed with that as kids, is that not the PewDiePie of our childhood?
I would, when I was old enough to find beer, maybe not buy it, we would listen to the radio out on a porch while we drank, and I would call in every night to try and entertain the DJ, and I was on the radio a lot. But I didn't know that they would edit it, and then they would play it way later in the night, because I would curse a lot.
Though actually, I just heard my stepdad last year, he saved it for me. He called in to a station of like Stump the Guy thing of just like, can you get more questions right than my co-host? And he won.
But you
he
still,
won tickets to.
We have audio evidence of you calling in being made fun of by Tom Sharpling on the best show.
That's a little different, but yes.
But you still do it.
Yes, yeah.
I have a clip on my YouTube account of John Hodgman making fun of me for about 10 minutes on the best show.
On that same show, I first called in to talk to John Hodgman, but mainly you're going to get made fun of on that show. But I've met Tom Sharpling in person.
Made fun of by Greg Universe. Archie Comics. You got to listen to this thing called Books, Henry.
Yes. He's like, did you read this book? I was like, well, I read Cavalier and Clay. He's like, it's a book about comics. Like, I was like,
he did give you the business.
Yes. I said, well, I read The Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar Wilde. He's like, that's also about comic books. I was like, oh, that's also about Dominican Republic. But
this is going to be our longest episode.
But anyway, let's get back to that phone call that Bart's on.
Kid wants the elephant.
We don't have a damn elephant.
Don't whisper into the mic.
Kid, the elephant's a gag prize. Nobody takes the gag prize. You want the cash.
I want the elephant.
Stick it to the man. No, wait. We'll call you back. Bart, with $10,000, we'd be millionaires. We could buy all kinds of useful things like love.
Or double-ply windows. They look just like regular windows, but they'll save us 4% on our heating bill. Oh. Well, they will.
Great line reading.
That's why those crickets are there for that moment of silence. Wow. Like, that's why the crickets are there.
That makes a lot of sense. I love how just Julie Kavner is reading that and like the deflation halfway through on our heating bill.
Our heating bill.
I'm so old now that I immediately connected. 4% over 20 years is not.
Marge is smart.
Marge is very practical there. But Lisa, normally you think Lisa would be into the environmental cause of that, but she is immediately getting into her anti-animal cruelty thing, which is great. But
what is the response to her? Just like,
they also
go to your room.
Go to your room, as in they're putting her in a cage. But it is a repeating. Season 5 is full of jokes of, one character says something and everyone else stares at them.
Yeah.
And so that was another
thing. They don't acknowledge
moment.
It, yeah.
Also, in real life, when you hang up on a person who is, you're in the middle of getting a prize, you lost that prize.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, Homer invalidated the contest by hanging up on Bill and Marty.
It's also funny to think that by turning down $10,000, Bart actually cost them probably more than $10,000.
I didn't look into it. I don't know what an elephant costs. You probably can't buy one legally anymore.
Well, they talk anymore. About how, like, his food bill was $300 this day, the amount of damage Stampy will do. We're getting ahead of ourselves, but Bart goes to KBBL, which is, I think this is the first time we have been inside KBBL. Like, we've never seen the inside. Well,
we did
with
Spinal Tap, yeah.
Spinal Tap, but also talking about God.
Oh, yeah.
Gabbing about God.
Yeah. Bart is now at KBBL, and Bill and Marty first are shocked that he doesn't care that they'll get fired, but then they're ready to make a deal.
We think we know how your mind works, Bart. So how about this? We pay your principal $10,000 to pull down his pants and keep him down for the rest of the school year.
I'll do it, Bart.
No.
Okay. What if we use the $10,000 to surgically transform Skinner here into some kind of a lobster-like creature?
Well, now, wait just a minute. That wasn't discussed with me.
Gentlemen, I am not leaving without my elephant. Hey!
Whee!
Where's my elephant? Where's my elephant? Where's my elephant? Where's my elephant?
Hey, they're playing the elephant song.
I love that. Reminds me of elephants.
Season 5 is really devoted to stripping dignity from Skinner at every chance, and he is so destitute.
I'll do it.
Or just desperate. He's like, I'll do it, Bart.
For $10,000, he'll be humiliated for the rest of the school
that's
year.
At least, this is March. It's at least like 3 months in Simpsons time. He'll walk around with his pants down.
He's a guy who, in a couple episodes, he will lose a pair of underpants and can't buy them, but can't buy more.
I needed those.
Really needed those. Like,
I really did.
First off, that Homer in just the little thing that Homer picks up some piece of paper and then just walks into the studio and is doing something while
he's
talking.
On the microphone, yes. Like in the background.
Oh, I missed that. Wow.
And then Homer's reaction of "Wee!" for being thrown out.
You wouldn't really know he was there until he's thrown out. Funnily, that's why I love this episode.
And that it's basically the same joke as he did say "well" a lot as. As reminds me of elephants, but I love that reminds me of elephants line. And so this was the research I did, Bob, the one clip you didn't get. What is that song? It's not just any old song they're singing over.
And it's not Baby Elephant Walk, which they've used before.
No, it is Francis Lai's A Man and a Woman.
Really?
All instrumental, correct?
From what? Genesis?
From the film of the same name, A Man and a Woman, or Une Femme et un... Oh, wait, sorry. Or Un Homme et une Femme. Mm-hmm. But it was a 1966 French New Wave film about two widowers who fall in love. And it's just a kind of a lot of like meet cute. It's a romantic comedy, but a black and white one. And so,
would it surprise you this radio station is struggling by playing French instrumentals? Well, the version, elevator music?
The version of the show sounds like the like roller skating rink version. all organ.
I mean... This is kind of close to it, but there's a million covers of it. It's just called A Man and a Woman, but yes, Francis Lai is the maker of it. So that it took a little digging to find it, but that is
good
the
job,
song
Henry.
That is forever now known as the Elephant Song.
It's not it's a gift to mascots.
It does feel like something they would have done, like have the baby elephant walk. So if you think outrage culture is a new thing now, this whole section here proves
I'm steaming mad about outrage culture, Henry.
But this proves how ample it was then, like in the 80s, in the 70s, in the 60s, something would be a popular target to be mad of and for everybody's hate. And that is what happens with Bill and Marty.
Yeah.
I love the paper of a lie of like straight A student won't get elephant. Like, that's so great.
And it's like people just had different channels to funnel their rage through, like the mail.
Yeah,
not tweets. We're just doing mail at this time. So
it's supposedly a parody of Bonfire of the Vanities, which
really?
The last time I remember my parents reading the same book.
Oh, okay.
Bonfire of the Vanities.
I just remember the movie being a huge flop, but this is also a very pre 9/11 joke about letter bombs, which are not very, which I don't think Simpsons would have joked about later.
I like how she's setting them off by touching them with a pointer.
Yeah.
She's not that scared of them.
This is the DJ 3000. It plays CDs automatically, and it has three distinct varieties of inane chatter.
Hey, how about that weather out there?
Whoa, that was the caller from hell. Well, hot dog, we have a wiener.
Man, that thing's great.
Don't praise the machine.
If you don't get that kid an elephant by tomorrow, the DJ-3000 gets your job.
Looks like those clowns in Congress did it again. What a bunch of clowns.
How does he keep up with the news like that?
Is that Marty?
That was Marty.
Okay,
yes.
So stupid. Again, okay, so... I think if this episode had been made 5 years later, that would have been Lindsay Nagel. Like, I feel like she's very much a Lindsay Nagel, like, heartless executive type.
I mean, before
but she's
they,
in the right here.
Before they crystallized the character of Lindsay Nagel as the Tress MacNeille voice, even then, which that wasn't.
Yeah.
That they have Lindsay Nagel types all around there. Like most women in charge are in that kind of mold. Though she is absolutely right of just like this is you are a burden to our radio station by not giving this kid his elephant.
I read it as being in professional turmoil. Your jobs were never safe. If your job is to get an elephant or you're fired.
No job is safe, really.
No job is safe, and you need to embrace that, people. But
two things I want to say. I feel like this is the first time 3,000 was applied to something instead of 2,000 to denote futuristic thing.
Well,
we've seen 2,000 things before in The Simpsons, but I don't think 3,000.
Within The Simpsons, yes, but Mystery Science Theater 3000,
right.
You know.
But 2000 was a very, very popular thing to add to things. Like, Get a Life did it. Some episodes were named blank 2000. Yeah. I think almost every second season episode was. Maybe I'm wrong.
I love that shit. I miss when people call things like the blank 2000 because we're coming up to 2000. So it's so in the future,
man. Can you imagine the year 2000? Also, DJ 3000 is just Clear Channel now. There are no real local stations. No. It was all consumed thanks to Bill Clinton. Thanks a lot, bro. I mean, he didn't know what would happen. But
sure,
Every radio station is now just a Clear Channel thing that's given content every day.
When it was a big bummer to just try to request a song at a station and they would just tried to do it and they just tell you like
we have licensed 200 songs. We cannot play a song that we have not licensed.
I lived through the era of radio stations dying and I had favorites like 107.9 The End. It was a Cleveland station, but they're all alternative rock. They turned into R&B and then they turned into Clear Channel horseshit. So
The best thing I can recommend to that, there's an episode of Marin where he becomes obsessed with local DJs and they talk about their lives of having to like nomadically pull up roots every year and go change when a station changes format. I'm obsessed with shit like that. I love old DJs. I really do.
Well, you know, with you mentioned
they used to be tastemakers and like freelance comedians and like that doesn't really happen anymore. I don't think.
Well, you mentioned Tom Sharpling in The Best Show. That is like where his roots are. We're doing that and he used to, now it's a podcast, but he used to be for over a decade he was on WFMU, which is one of the biggest independent radio stations that needs a pledge drive twice a year to stay open, but they just play what they want and they have albums on shelves that they then take them off and play them. Like, that's really cool, but that's artisanal radio. You only get that radio because people directly pay for it, like they would on, say, a Patreon, perhaps.
I would always do that with Patreon. But I just thought the podcast Comedy Bang Bang, formerly Comedy Death Ray, was a radio show.
Yes.
Which is why the early episodes have, like, songs in them. Like, cool, like, weird novelty songs that Scott Aukerman would put in. So.
And I miss that. You know, you hear those original ones, you miss that live element a little bit. But the Comedy Bang Bang is still a great show. That actually, it's funny you mentioned that. I was about to bring up Comedy Bang Bang, the TV show, because it was a running joke that Scott Aukerman would just look to the camera and say, I think the circus must have just came through town in Washington, D.C. because they're missing all their clowns. Or somebody called the circus, I found all their clowns in Congress. And I just love that. It's such like a centrist way of like just saying, all of Congress sucks, right? These clowns in Washington, can you believe them?
I prefer a man cave, more like a man's grave.
That's my favorite. Yeah. But just that idea of like, what a bunch of clowns.
Yeah,
I
just
think
like
of
being
them,
a boring centrist, like all politicians are bad.
Just lame. I always think of that as lame political commentary that would be acceptable on the radio. Like, of just saying like, what a bunch of clowns. God, I love that joke so much. They don't explain it, but somehow Bill and Marty get an elephant.
And drive off immediately.
And the elephant's arrival was a reference I got as a kid. Like, oh, that's Jurassic Park. That's a T-Rex's
the first real Jurassic Park reference in The Simpsons. Yeah,
that's true,
I don't know. Again, we talk about, me being pop culture woke. Jurassic Park is the first phenomenon like I was on board with from the beginning, and it was nice to see. And we talked about it with the T2 parody in Homer Loves a Poo. Like a movie, I got that. I didn't know the Hitchcock joke. Yes. I didn't know the right stuff joke.
Well, like these are younger writers referencing things that they just saw. Yeah. So.
Though I thought it was mean to Al Gore. He doesn't look like an elephant, but it's a funny like Al Gore. Thing that does look like Al Gore. But that also, Stampy immediately puts Bart in his mouth, and there's some consternation on the commentary too that like Matt Groening says elephants aren't carnivorous. They don't. But I looked this up. There have been man-eating elephants in the past.
Whoa,
they are isolated incidents. Like there's a story of this rampaging elephant in some rural village in India. They kill it when it's rampaging, and they find in its contents, in its stomach, flesh. And there's also been times like you're more likely, if an elephant's going to kill you, they're going to trample you, not stick you in their mouth.
I have seen one of the first DVDs I bought was one of those things off TV, banned from television, and the rampaging elephants. I'm like, yeah, I never realized how easily they can murder you with no effort.
Yeah, I mean, it's the dangers of working with animals.
Now, I'll recommend that restored Alamo Drafthouse version of Roar,
yes,
where you can see elephant really hurt Tippi Hedren, but it also throws a boat into the air with its trunk and then kicks it. Like, there's no way they choreographed that. No. The elephant just did it.
One of Matt Groening's like just kind of bizarre hang-ups about things that are not allowed, like the fish winking at the end of The War of the Simpsons. Like, animals must behave accurately because this is a cartoon, damn it.
I don't know what to give him credit for and criticize him for because the show is
wonderful. Yeah, his control helped the show not be shitty.
His control guided it and really helped out, but that... You know, you take the good with the bad with that stuff, and that is partially like why the show gets stiffer animation too. I would put that sum to Groening's just rigid feelings on which, you know, hey, it's his show, man.
Yeah.
Like, so the elephant has arrived, it's destroying things, and people aren't too happy about it. But Homer has, I love this quote so much.
Hey you, elephant, lift me up on your back, man. Bart! Cool! He tried to kill me.
I really think this is a bad idea.
Marge, I agree with you in theory. In theory, communism works. In theory.
Whenever I as a college kid talking about theoretical communism or if it could work in some countries,
in theory.
I would always think of this like, in theory? Like, you sound smart by saying
that. Smart, but you have no argument.
No, yes. In theory.
So one thing I noticed in this show is, for the first time, is Act 1 ends with Stampy arriving and the animals running away. They peek up over the horizon.
That
Stampy,
shit is so funny.
Stampy roars again. They dash off. That was not the original act break. The original act break was Bart saying, I think I'll call him Stampy, because there's a weird fade to black, which we never see after season one. So I feel like that was the original act break. In this.
You're so right. Yeah. I totally missed that, because it is a... A fade out and then fade into the same shot, and it's very confusing. I guess they felt like one was a better act break than the other.
Yeah, a better joke to go out on, maybe.
Yeah, though I think I'll call him Stampy. It's maybe not as funny as the visual of animals looking over the horizon.
Yeah.
But him getting his name is a good story beat to
him. That's just such a great shot and perfectly representative of what you'll never see on The Simpsons again.
Yes.
But
he's just smashing everything.
Well, no. The animals running away.
Oh,
like,
yes.
Like,
yeah.
The animals act behaving differently. A tracking shot going over to the side. And it doesn't look... Yeah, proportionally doesn't look great at all, but it's like, I love the idea of getting an elephant and scaring the
animal should know where the horizon is from the human's perspective.
I fired a bottle rocket off in front of our terrier, it ran 3 miles away.
Oh my god.
Had to pick her up at the pound.
I thought the world was ending, Chris.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow.
And that's a B joke I wish was played up more, because I love every second of the animals trying to compete with Stampy.
Well, this is Jim Reardon, and there's no wonder he went to Pixar after this. Yeah, I mean, he's a great, talented guy.
Lisa is trying her best to stop Stampy from being hurt, and I love when she tries to feed him. It's great. Well, oh yeah, but first,
because she has the same dejected delivery as Marge with the windows.
Yes, exactly.
Here you go, Stampy. Eat it slow. It has to last for. You ate it too fast.
Uh-huh. Maybe if we tied it down so it couldn't move, it wouldn't get so hungry.
You can't do that, Dad. It's cruel.
Oh, everything's cruel according to you. Keeping him chained up in the backyard is cruel. Pulling on his tail is cruel. Yelling in his ears is cruel. Everything is cruel. So excuse me if I'm cruel.
Stampy does respond to that, but it feels like that joke about helping the homeless people and Bart gets famous. What do they do for us? It's nothing.
It's just his speech. And again, I feel like that's a John Swartzwelder speech. But yes. Just,
everything is cruel.
I'm
seeing a lot on the news now. More responsibility is not my problem.
I love Homer's practicality of just like, well, if we tied him down and he couldn't move, then he wouldn't be as hungry again. It's like, I didn't get the clip at Homer. Takes him to Moe's, and just the way Moe goes, like, you're really taking advantage of me. He's like, shut up.
That happened with the NASA guy, too. I think this is like another anti-sitcom thing from Merkin. Like, instead of saying a clever thing to Moe, he's just like, shut up. Yeah. And the scene ends. It's great.
Then they take Stampy to an arboretum to eat all that foliage. And yeah, it did. That taught me the word arboretum. And my mom is a big fan of arboretums. Every time she, she's kind of stopped that now, but whenever she'd visit me in Berkeley, she would go to the Berkeley Arboretum.
Well, I've never been. I should go there.
If you like looking at trees and places.
Boy, do I.
It's just too expensive to have Stampy. Oh, I also did love Homer. Homer's freak out. That was also felt like a very David Silverman thing. Like, he's killing him. Yeah, stop him.
Those drawings were definitely Silverman.
Yes, but it sounds like Stampy, it's not so cheap having an elephant.
Hey, what's with them?
I think they're trying to get some attention.
Oh, good luck. Look at these bills. Chain for elephant. Shots for elephant. Oversized decorative poncho.
Technically, it's for a giraffe, but I think I can let it out a little.
Well, these bills will have to be paid out of your allowance.
You have to raise my allowance to about $1,000 a week.
Then that's what I'll do, smart guy.
Homer really should have kept the card from Marge on the Lam.
Yeah, he should have.
Don't do anything Bart says card.
He must have lost it.
But just... The animal's right across the room on a ball.
Yeah.
And the disdain in his voice. Good luck, cat.
Yeah. Why is Homer so mad? Good. Is he not getting attention either? He's like, good luck around this place getting attention.
That is one of my favorite lines in this history of the show.
He's just angry for no reason.
Good luck. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
And right before this, there's a great little gag of Bart being tucked in by Stampy and then eaten by Stampy and then put back.
Thanks,
that. Bob. Our shitty, crappy boss at a job Bob and I used to work at.
Not no more.
He had a cell from that scene putting Bart back in his... I showed it. I saw it months into my thing. Bob
did,
only
did
saw
still have the key card? Let's steal that shit.
If only. But it's like hiding behind a door in his makeshift dumb office. It should be a meeting room instead of an office, you asshole.
Yeah, it's like, you're a rich idiot. I appreciate this. You don't.
Yeah. So it's, unless it's a recreation, maybe it is because he never told us this is the original, but I think it is. It is the cell and the background. Mm-hmm. It is him being placed back in there.
I'll be shocked if it's the background.
I would have talked with that guy about The Simpsons, but I said hi to him in the hallway. He pretended not to see me and then talked to somebody else. So,
yeah.
Great guy.
What a cool dude that guy was, man. But anyway, I now can't look at that scene without thinking of me coveting.
Well, now I can't, Henry. Thank you.
I'm sorry. Homer is letting these kids ride the elephant.
It's a finance. It's food.
Which, like, $1 and $2 in 1994 prices is too low for riding an elephant.
Another favorite line of mine. Well, that was never 5 feet.
Yes. And this was the first time I noticed that kid doesn't move afterwards. He's unconscious. They don't animate him waking up.
And the mother argues about the price.
That was never 5 feet. She doesn't care about the kid anymore.
All of it is so great. Did you ride an elephant?
I've never.
I've done it a billion times, and I don't know why, and I can't remember where.
Friend or something.
We're living in a year when the circus is gone. Like, I don't know where you'll be able to get close to an elephant. No, not necessarily not. That's a good thing.
It'd be cruel if you care about elephants, then you may
have
been like
I'm baffled by it. Like, how many times? Like, I was bored of riding elephants.
I mean,
so much.
An animal smart enough to mourn the dead doesn't want to give you a fucking ride.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, consider, like, if your dog asked you for a piggyback ride, you'd do it all the time.
I would, yes. But, and, or when you were so little you could ride a big dog. Mm-hmm. That would be fun.
I love picking up kids. I might do it.
But,
get permission first.
That came out wrong.
But this scene also has a first appearance.
Real line of the show.
Okay, this is the line of show. Let's hear that line of show jingle.
That's the joke.
That animal of yours is certainly bad-tempered.
Yeah, well, you'd be grumpy, too, if you were taken out of your natural habitat and gawked at by a bunch of slack-jawed yokels.
Hey, Ma, look at that pointy-haired little girl.
Lisa's face in this shot. It's so... I love that. That's Cletus... That's Cletus's first appearance with no name.
He wouldn't be named Cletus until Home Sweet Home Dim Dudley Doodly or whatever it's called.
I couldn't believe
seven.
You said that whole thing. Yeah, it was the
Is that an accurate title?
Yes, that is. And that is the season premiere of season 7. That was the first Oakley and Weinstein one. So he was always slack-jawed yokel in the script.
Just like Snake was Jailbird.
Yeah, exactly. But for the joke of Homer saying, let's stop the fussing and the feuding. I love you, Pa.
I love you, Cletus.
Yeah. That was when his name became Cletus.
I feel like I can say this about a lot of Simpsons characters on the show. This is my favorite never-used character, and then it became my character I don't ever want to see again.
What time and Hal Byrne?
Yeah, well, they overused him to an extent, I suppose, but he was so great.
I use a line of him from Simpsons movie all the time. My time to shine.
They also retconned his name. He was given a last name, Cletus Delroy, which eventually became Cletus Spuckler. Spuckler. Which is a much better white
trash.
Which
means out there in the Simpsons universe, there's a Cubert Spuckler. That makes me so happy.
Well, and so Cletus got to become... Them discovering Cletus was like, oh, we can do every redneck joke we've ever wanted to do.
Hey, Ma! Yeah, I like how it always starts with, hey, Ma!
Yeah, or that eventually he would be having sex with his sister. Like,
if you can watch that joke and remember that Cletus doesn't exist... It's the greatest fucking joke you've ever seen in your life.
I mean, born-haired little girl.
And it's framed so well, and Lisa looks so pissed.
We eventually got the Cletus Extended Universe, Brandine, Diabetti. I mean, they're all there. His 19 children.
His 19 children, including Rumor and...
Scout?
Scout, yeah.
Both Demi Moore and Bruce Willis's children, yeah.
I love Cletus so much. Yeah. At least in the first 10 years, I love Cletus quite a lot. And that also tells you why... In his 22 short films appearance, he is Cletus, the slack-jawed yokel.
Yeah.
So that was them. So Homer thinks he's made money, but it still isn't enough to even pay those bills. And I should have got it. I love him saying, don't humiliate me in front of the money. And so he tries to change the prices, and as usual, Homer does it all wrong of too high.
And I just noticed in the shot, he rewrites the sign. And the sign is facing Flanders Hedge.
Well, and when he looks around for the people gone, it's just slow reaction of like looking in every direction, like where did everyone go? And then he tries to renegotiate the price in a pretty funny scene with the Milhouse
house
family.
By house.
Milhouse saw the elephant twice and rode him once, right?
Yes, but we paid you $4.
Well, that was under our old price structure. Under our new price structure, your bill comes to a total of $700. Now, you've already paid me $4, so that's just $696 more that you owe me.
Get off our property.
The most assertive
this
Kirk...
This town is full of deadbeats.
The most assertive Kirk Van Houten has ever been.
Yeah.
Question, though. Did he talk in Bart's Friend Falls in Love?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought so.
Because Luann Van Houten says he's up and full of beans, and then Kirk shows up to say something else. I forget his name.
I know we talk because I remember, because I just heard Hank Azaria say, like, where'd you get that voice from? He's like, I'm just copying Pamela.
Yeah, he is.
Like, I'm doing an impression of Milhouse as his dad, and like, my mind when he said that it's just an impression of Milhouse.
He would actually not be named Kirk until the Halloween episode in season 6 when he's complaining about Milhouse eating 2 spaghetti dinners.
But in a cut line, but it's still established he was Kurt. Nobody wants that Kurt.
It's Kirk.
Yeah, Kirk. But you're right, that was the most assertive he's ever been.
Get off our property.
But that shot was so great, too, of the... It's just one static shot. They don't cut into anything. And so you get the real feel of the emptiness of Milhouse's kitchen.
They're just staring at Homer as he continues to spout bullshit.
And I just love that next... I kept it in there, just Homer's line, like, this town is full of deadbeats. I'm just like, he's gone to dozens of houses and nobody will give
him money.
He's
trying to extort people.
So it's time to get rid of that elephant. And so they're trying to find somebody to take him. The line of, well, he is and he isn't. I need him today. Am I wrong to think that he wants to have sex with that elephant? Is that what he wants that elephant for?
No, I never read that.
This was the first time. At first I thought it was just a non sequitur of just somebody saying, if you're trying to sell them your car, you're trying to sell them anything at a garage sale, they're just like, well, it is and it isn't.
I thought it was him haggling over an elephant.
It was haggling, but haggling doesn't work on Homer because he has no idea. But
yeah, I think it was just like Homer doesn't know how to haggle. He doesn't know the elephant business firsthand.
You do
so
know
it's
you're
like,
the only one within 1,000 miles with an elephant for sale.
Yeah.
You have you have all the marbles.
This was the first
time
This was the first time where I thought I read it as that the guy was like, I'm probably
you
just
would feel
wrong.
Nothing. You can move into an elephant's vagina.
And,
it's not worth fucking.
Then we meet Stampy's eventual savior.
Unnamed guy.
The unnamed person carry at the elephant sanctuary that is somehow local to Springfield or local enough. And I just love Homer's reaction to the idea of charity. He's just like, so your bid is zero. Like that's all Homer can think of with charity is just
thank
like, so
you.
You're saying you want me, you got to give me nothing. And
thank you.
And then we meet somebody
this
who is ready to get that.
This is so great.
Another great Fox joke, too.
But it's not only great, because I loved Fox at the time, because they were different and weird and more ribald. And The Simpsons had made a ton of jokes about Fox. Now that we know who Rupert Murdoch is, this joke reads a little more like, no, you really, really did hate your boss.
Yes, yeah. Though, I'm also going to warn you, I cut out the part where the animals talk, but they do say, we love you during this.
Dad, I think he's an ivory dealer. His boots are ivory, his hat is ivory, and I'm pretty sure that check is ivory.
Lisa, a guy who has lots of ivory is less likely to hurt Stampy than a guy whose ivory supplies are low.
Mr. Blackheart?
Yes, my pretty.
Are you an ivory dealer?
Little girl, I've had lots of jobs in my day. Whale hunter, seal clubber, president of the Fox Network, and like most people, I've dealt with a little ivory.
He does have the name of a Captain Planet villain. Mr. Blackheart.
I just love that first, like, Mr. Blackheart. Yes, my pretty.
Yes, my pretty. But
seal clubbing.
They didn't just single out Fox. They singled out a specific individual of Fox.
President of
there
the Fox.
There hasn't been a lot of other presidents of the Fox.
I'm sure they hated Barry Diller, too, if he was still around.
Yeah, they hated all their bosses. Who wouldn't? But season 5 is so filled of so many knocks at Fox. Mm-hmm. They really... And then, you know, you got to give it to... Maybe Fox couldn't stop them because they had a no notes rule, but like they were. They
I don't think you
do
could.
It.
The shit we read about how executives being angry can cancel a show.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think you could pick on the Fox Network this much.
Well, Married with Children did a lot. Yeah. I mean, it's like the family would get into Fox Network viewing positions. They would hold hands and hold up foil to get the Fox Network, and they would make jokes about Fox all the time.
Well, and it would kind of top out when Rupert Murdoch would finally just be on the show and call himself a billionaire tyrant.
Well, he would be in prison first, played by Dan Castellaneta.
Yeah, and then he would also appear again in a way too winky joke, but it did make me laugh of him saying, you've saved my network. Uh-huh. Wouldn't be the first time.
I think he's in jail with Sideshow Bob. He's like, I own 30% of that network.
Yes, yeah, he is in jail with Sideshow Bob. And Bart even doesn't want Stampy to get sold. And so he helps Stampy escape, who immediately hits him and just like runs away.
Breaks the fence.
Yes, he just immediately abandons him. And I do wonder what Ned's original line was. You could tell the mouth movements were way off for that Four Elephants of the Apocalypse.
Yeah.
But it was a funny line. I like that line better than the other obvious ADR of... This is like that fat man I used to ride to work.
It's an okay. I mean, it doesn't really fit with the mouth flaps, but apparently from the commentary, it was a joke about Mr. Burns' like bones sliding out of his hips or something like that. Like it was a very awkward position he was in. You could tell he was in pain.
You know, I half believe Dave Silverman. That's the real joke. I feel like the animator would remember a line he had to draw.
Yeah,
way more than a writer. But also, I feel like, no, that can't be the line, right? But
yeah, I think Jim Reardon...
legs do look popped out.
They do. Like, Jim Reardon was not on this commentary. I want to say he was probably working on WALL-E at this time.
He likely was.
Yeah.
Then when Homer finds out, I just, again, they have him scream again in this episode, and it's so great.
They're in love with him screaming around this time.
Mom! Dad! Bart and Stampy are gone!
Oh, my Lord!
I bet it's because of that horrible ivory dealer, Dad.
He took Bart, too? That wasn't part of our deal, Blackheart! That wasn't part!
Wow, Dan Castellaneta is really bringing it this week.
And then Homer thinks he's in an action film. Just be like, that wasn't part of our deal.
So good.
The black art doesn't come back.
I aspire to be angry enough to scream at a window.
So they try to find Stampy, and there's a tornado also wreaking havoc that's confusing them. And there's a weird joke, kind of a Wizard of Oz-style thing, where Patty and Selma are caught in the tornado, but they enjoy it because wind is blowing up their skirts. It's kind of gross.
Well, yeah, they had to get some sort of extra joke in there, but obviously the visual of two women in a rocking chair staying in a... That's the same thing Dorothy sees on her way to Oz when Twister picks up her house.
And I'm not...
it's got Patty and Selma.
I'm not into cross-dressing. Hell, I don't want to wash the jeans I'm wearing right now. But if I could wear something where the wind could constantly touch my genitals, I think I might do it.
You can
forever.
Do it, Chris. It's called a utilikilt. There you go.
I forget the funny woman who said this, but she said, guys, you don't need to bother with utilikilts. Just say you like wearing dresses. It's cool. Dresses are fun. Like,
it doesn't have to be a heavy denim version of that. I'm down.
Instead, they're like, no, it's a tough thing, a kilt, like tough guys in Scotland.
Can we start out with a wind hole to touch my dick?
You can make your own, Chris. But okay. I mean, but that Marge is not alarmed.
Speed holes in my pants.
It's a one-off joke, but there's no comment from Marge. Like, my sisters are in a tornado.
Yeah, my sisters are masturbating with a tornado.
They kind of are. You're right.
But I do love that just joke of, like, we'll just follow the destruction. Like, no, we can't follow the destruction because it's a tornado. And then you have another very murkety joke of avoiding the smashed glass for it to then just be thrown in
away.
A dumpster and smashed anyway. For the second episode in a row, Wiggum literally becomes Edward G. Robinson. Like, I'm Edward G. Robinson.
We did cover that in a previous episode,
right? We just
did.
That's why it would be redundant in just the last episode in Homer Loves Flanders.
I remember looking into the clip of Edward G. Robinson that, it doesn't sound anything like that. It's been warped and ruined.
We're just used to Hank Azaria's bad version of it that became a great new character.
Kind of like how Dana Carvey's George Bush doesn't sound a lot like the actual George Bush. It's like... Yeah, it's just like very much like an exaggeration of this little tics.
1,000 points of light, not going to end it.
But it was, the original Edward G. Robinson read was like, you're not going to finger my brother, C. And like, that's it? That's where this whole impression came from?
After learning where that Where's Your Messiah Now came from, I think they're just doing a version of Billy Crystal doing Edward G. Robinson.
They're doing a telephone version of a person's voice.
Speaking of politicians like George H.W. Bush, I love this joke so very much of the visual gag of the elephant going through the place, going through the conventions of both the Republicans and the Democrats. First off, goes to the Republicans. Everybody cheers because the elephant is the animal, the mascot of the Republicans. And the signs are, we want what's worst for everyone.
Yes.
And we're just plain evil.
Now, Henry, you're not being political. You're telling a joke that happened on The Simpsons, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't think
is it safe to say we agree with this joke?
I would agree with that joke. And I'll say I agree with the Democrat joke.
Oh, me too, especially after the last election.
We hate ourselves and we can't govern?
We can't govern. We hate life and ourselves.
Even then.
Yeah, I guess that is a fine being a progressive. I don't like this. I was at the bank for 3 hours.
I know. That sucked. But it's just such a great joke. And you already have the joke of the elephant being cheered by the Republicans and booed by the Democrats. But it's those signs that are just perfect that it is. And even 23 years later, the joke still works.
I see that meme everywhere. I see it posted
it's
everywhere.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
And it is truly a centrist joke. Like, those are pointed and good mockings of both political parties in America. And then comes, I love this joke too so much, also because I feel like when I was a kid, my parents would mention working in a peanut factory as like some lesser thing or whatever, but this peanut factory joke is so great. This guy, this guy's hubris and wanting to, I could so identify with wanting to be just like, I told you so.
It's so Schwarzweldian, just this joke. The setup, the endless setup for this joke.
After the elephant runs through the Republican-Democrat convention,
Stampy is heading towards
the
peanut factory.
The peanut factory!
This is the moment we feared, people. Many of you thought it would never happen, but I insisted we spend 2 hours every morning training for it. You all thought I was mad. Many of you requested to be transferred to another peanut factory. But now, we...
This is so great.
I kind of want an episode about this guy and his endless peanut factory elephant drills.
Yeah, what's... who's to say he couldn't have been reused as often as Slack-jawed Yokel, you know? He premieres in this episode, too. Yeah.
You don't even have to future-proof Peanuts all that much. Like, they're still around, baby.
Peanut Factory probably haven't changed all that much in 23 years.
It's a great joke, but I think I like this guy because he reminds me of Hank Hill. He takes his kind of crappy job yes. way too seriously, and it hurts everyone around him.
Yeah. Requested to be transferred to other Peanut Factories.
How many Peanut Factories are in Springfield?
How skilled is the labor?
Yeah.
And that, yeah, 2 hours every day to plan for what happens when an elephant comes in there. That, yeah, you're right. It's such a Schwarzweldian thing of like building up this thing, not even directly saying it. You have to infer that this guy's greatest nightmare was that an elephant was going to storm his peanut factory.
Or it happened before. It happened to him before. Yeah.
It creates... It
does seem worldly.
Yeah. I love jokes like that that create more story to it and more background that you have to infer.
I hate over-discussing a joke, but this joke is a fucking wonderful comedic onion.
Yeah, I love
it. It's so good.
God, I love that joke so much. And then pretty soon after, Bart is looking for Stampy in another reference.
I never read this before. I know, because I know what Henry's going to play.
Yes. So, Bob, this was a clip you sent.
If you were watching Nickelodeon in the mid to late 80s, and this show would be just filler. They would have Dennis the Menace and things like this.
It seems cruel now. If you're watching SpongeBob and they cut to like a 1960s black and white sitcom.
Yeah, yeah.
I know. Dennis the Menace was amazing compared to this. Like, Lassie was the... let's just hear the theme song.
I think, let me see if I can still do this. Do I know everybody's name?
Starring
June Lockhart.
Hugh Riley. John Provost.
John Provost says Timmy, and of course...
And of course, Lassie.
What's up with the touching Lassie love theme? Also, June Lockhart, total babe.
Dude, this...
I only realized that...
Did you know the second Lassie movie, he fought Nazis?
No.
Lassie was so fucking huge that we did a Laser Time all about shows that aired after the Super Bowl.
Hmm.
And it's my favorite bit of trivia with Lassie. Lassie's the first.
Wow.
The biggest show the world could think to show after the Super Bowl was Lassie.
Wow.
Lassie, the show about a black and white show about a collie who could sense water and find children from billions of miles away.
It was a smart, helpful dog that would always help Timmy.
Is it presumptuous to want to save this for the Laddie episode?
I did a lot of... We'll do it again. People will forget. But I did Lassie research.
That's 2 years from now.
I did Lassie research. The character is like a sort of a public domain character from the 19th century, just like the Lassie figure. Mm-hmm. But it was immortalized in a 1940 book, then a 1943 movie, and then several movies after that, and then a TV show from 1954 to 1973.
Man. It was one of the biggest shows ever, and like it was syndicated all over the place. And if you had Nickelodeon before I don't think they had original programming.
The closest thing to original would be the stuff they got from Canada, like Pinwheel or You Can't Do
That
on
Television. We talked about that on a recent Laser Time. You Can't Do That on Television. But that alone wasn't their show and built the tone and foundation of their network.
But they were at least new things that were made. Yeah. Same with Cut It Out. What was that show?
Out of Control.
Dave Coulier. Mainly Canada and in English shows like Danger Mouse.
Yep.
Those were their newest programming.
Count Duckula.
Yeah, in Banana Mom.
You were watching a bunch of foreign programming.
Yes. But I must say, the season 5 MST3K episode, The Painted Hills, is a Lassie movie.
It's a Lassie movie. Oh. It's insane.
Let me tell you, there were 591 Lassie episodes. That's like an anime almost.
Simpsons has a beat now. But
But like by 20 episodes.
Wow.
And I keep hearing people saying, oh, it's the longest running cartoon, longest running show. It's not. I don't know why they keep saying The Simpsons is. There's a show in Japan called Sazae-san,
which
the creator will not let it be released in any format. It will only air on TV, but it's been running since like the 60s.
Yes.
Like for 50 years.
Was that the one where I was working at Capcom.
I think
Capcom.
It's about like a Japanese housewife.
Okay, never
mind. Well, actually, that's funny you say that because I had read this in books before of calling Sazae-san the Japanese Simpsons, or that it was like they had trouble bringing The Simpsons over there because they're like, well, we already have Sazae-san. But I heard the same thing actually from friend of the show and listener, Daniel Fite. Hey, Daniel. Who he has lived in Osaka for years and years now, has a family there, is married to a Japanese wife. And he said that when they came to America to go to Universal Studios, and he was so excited to be at the Simpsons area, and that his wife didn't understand it, and or she was like, "Oh, it's like Sazae-san. Like, this is
That's
Daniel.
Crazy.
If I'm telling the story wrong, correct me." But so even. It is a standard thing to be like, oh yeah, Sazae-san is the Simpsons of Japan, or the closest equivalent.
Like Cran Chinchan is probably more like the Simpsons.
Well, and if you but you've only seen Bart's dingus once.
Yeah,
and that doodle. It's a doodle. Great milestone for the Simpsons to have run this long. But I do episodes of Laser Time, a show sort of like this, but based on a topic.
Yes.
And Japan constantly shits over every milestone because everything you think has been done first. The first cartoon made into a movie, the first cartoon made into live action, the longest running show. They did it all first.
So
always.
One last Sazae-san tidbit. It's running from October 5th, 1969 to the present. Episodes 7,600 plus. So The Simpsons,
shit.
You got to run for 10 times longer to beat Sazae-san.
And is that, I can't even do the math in my head. Is that a weekly show or a daily show?
I think it's been running every week, like every long-running anime for 50 years.
And so the creator will never let it be anything but a TV show.
That's a stipulation. I don't know why.
But what would you do with it now?
Well,
the complete series, a fucking forklift brings you a DVD case to your house?
Well, so this is a big difference, though, between America. Mm-hmm. Like how America works with adaptations and the way they do in Japan is that adapt a manga, almost everybody owns their work. Like Akira Toriyama's name, and he's involved in every Dragon Ball thing because he owns Dragon Ball Z. Mm-hmm. He doesn't own the animation exactly, but he owns the characters, and you can't make more Dragon Ball Z without his involvement. And that's how it is with not like the majority of anime series and animation in Japan. So that guy having that much control to say what you can't do with it, I'm not shocked. Like, there's lots of people who have that. Like, there's reasons. Like, here's a quick one. Bob and I is one of our favorite manga artists who did the series Monster, 20th
Ooh.
Century Boys, Pluto, Urasawa-san. Yeah. Viz in America wanted to publish 20th Century Boys 5 years earlier than they did, but they weren't allowed to because the artist said, this can't be publishing at the same time as Monster in America because people will see that my art looks so different and I don't want that.
Wow, I didn't know that.
And they just did it. They're like, well, I guess we'll just sit on this license for 5 years and publish it when nobody's buying it.
I just imagine meetings at The Simpsons like, we would like to stop. That's not up to you.
And just one last note, Sazae-san, the creator died, but they're still honoring her wishes to never make merchandise or release it in any format. Damn. So there you go. So Simpsons, you got a lot of catching
up
to do.
Japanese Bill Watterson.
So they end up at the Springfield Tar Pits, which are the La Brea Tar Pits. And let me tell you, I learned a lot of things about the La Brea Tar Pits I didn't know before. Like, I knew it from
the movie Volcano?
Actually, because it was also featured in L.A. Noire, the video game.
It is! That's
right,
amazing.
But I'd always assumed that is hot tar, and you would die if you touched it. It isn't. It is
fake.
You don't want to touch that tar.
It's gross.
You never want it on you. But it's not. It's room. It's earth temperature. It is.
But is it real tar?
Well, actually, no. It's more like petroleum and tar form.
But it's from the earth. It's not something they make or dye.
No. It's just seeping garbage out of the earth. But there is a whole museum next to it because they did dig out fossils, as they mentioned in the episode, and they put the fossils in there. So this was another L.A. fixture being put into Springfield. The
it really
La Brea
is.
Tar Pits. If I ever, next time I go back to L.A., maybe I'll finally see those La Brea Tar Pits just to say I've done it.
But Henry, what if you see a deer?
Oh!
A deer! A female deer.
It's a great one-off joke. Sound of Music.
It's very cute.
Yeah.
Really good. And I've still never seen Sound of Music. I thought that joke was like, I feel like I was waiting for that to happen.
Well, even if you hadn't seen Sound of Music, I feel like in my music class we sang that song. It's a great children's song.
And a great Kids in the Hall sketch.
Do re mi fa sol la ti do. Yeah. That
team!
That Kids in the Hall, that is the best parody of it ever. I love that one so much. So the Simpsons have arrived. They finally found Bart at the tar pits and Stampy. Stampy's missing other elephants, but Homer still won't give him back, and now Homer's about to be hoisted by his own petard.
Dad, you're sinking!
Huh?
Get a rope, Bart!
No, that's okay. I'm pretty sure I can struggle my way out. First, I'll just reach in and pull my legs out. Now I'll pull my arms out with my face.
I love the bubbling there.
So I just like the idea of pulling your arms out with
your face.
And then he doesn't even close his eyes. Like, his eyes are open as he dunks his head in, like, to just to choose to dunk your head into tar is crazy.
Somebody had to tell, because I don't know why. I grew up in Florida swimming in both oceans and freshwater constantly. That I open my eyes and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And just recently, like, this lake in Oakland isn't a lake. It's where sewage runs into. My girlfriend's like, don't open your fucking eyes in there. Are you crazy?
You now have all the hepatitises.
The water tastes more like tea than anything I've ever been in.
The pulling your arms out with your face might be the stupidest Homer's been to this point. Great. It might be a new plateau has been hit on
but maybe
stupidness.
That's it. It's not jerk Homer, but he is peak stupid.
I enjoy him calmly explaining his bad plan, just going through the
pull
steps.
My arms out with my face. And this was another thing I found out about it. Like, at the Liberia tar pits, if you had a hot enough flame, you could get the tar on fire because there's enough methane around there. But you actually, a lighter won't exactly light it on fire, unlike what happens to Barney, which...
His second appearance in the show.
I love this light. Yeah.
Thanks, Stampy! Ow!
That's definitely ADR.
Yeah, he's been lit on fire and dead. He's just like,
ow, it's so good. Ow.
Well, it's the first time he's ever smoked a cigarette.
Yes, he's never smoked. But you can just assume he would by his lifestyle.
It doesn't, like, why would he care to not smoke? Yeah. But I feel like they wouldn't be able to do that joke again now, just like, well, Barney can't smoke.
It's still astonishing to me when I think about a lot about how passé, how taboo smoking has become in everything, considering how ubiquitous it was that it's Patty and Selma's trademark.
Yeah.
That'll give the show a different rating on television as we move
TVMA.
Forward.
Which, people should be smoking less. I'm not against not showing smoking less.
I don't smoke cigarettes.
It's just one of those weird things. I mean, I guess because I used to smoke, but that it'll drive a line into everything ever made.
Yeah.
More so than almost an aspect ratio. Yeah, or black and white. You'll know that it's before this time.
Rewatching the Ghostbusters recently, the first movie, like, everyone is just smoking.
Everyone smokes.
Casually, and nothing is called attention to. Just like,
I don't
he's
even
smoking.
Remember it. I've seen the movie 1,000 times. I didn't remember anybody smoking.
Nobody even says to Ray, like, put out your cigarette or whatever. It's just like, Ray is hanging out and he's smoking. Yeah,
in America, Disney movies, I recognize it as weird, and I wish someday I just want to do a reenactment of the Disney PSA. If you buy those movies on Blu-ray, and I still do, there's a giant 1 minute thing with all their animated characters smoking. This is bad. Don't do this.
God, I mean, I grew up in a household full of smokers. Mm-hmm. I don't mind if you smoke the listener, but whenever I'm behind someone walking around outside, I hate them with all of my heart. It's like, you're just going to let this burning ash fall behind you? Mm-hmm. That's great. I get to smell this too? Awesome. I'm on board for all of this.
It's almost like hot coals burning and virgin sacrifices in volcanoes. It feels like a very... I'm holding a vape pen. Because I've been a smoker for over half my life, not judging.
You've been vaping for a while, though, now. Mm-hmm. You're pretty much... When was the last time you smoked a cigarette, do you know?
I did. I've told that story a bunch, but I did because I was watching Casablanca just drinking straight whiskey out of a glass, just like a...
Humphrey Bogart?
Yeah, just like Humphrey Bogart. And then my roommate went out to have a cigarette, and like it's when that scene where he's lamenting in an empty bar about... Rick, yes. About everything that's happened, and he went to go smoke a cigarette. I'm like, this is the most 4D movie I've ever been in. And I asked my roommate, would you go out and smoke another cigarette? And he said yes. And then I asked him, like, got another one in you? He's like, no. And he threw me his pack of cigarettes. I'm like, yeah. And it was awesome. It felt I'm free of this burden because I smoked two cigarettes that night to watch Casablanca and drink whiskey. And I never had one again.
And then Bogey looked at you and said, here's looking at you, Chris.
Well, that really does date it, too, because I remember when your roommate left.
Of all the fat Italians in all the world with a nerdy-ass room and Simpsons action figures falling all over a recording studio, you had to emulate me.
So Stampy saves Homer's life, and actually Homer is as stupid as when he calls him a feline.
This is one of my favorite lines. Yes,
elephant.
I didn't get the feline line, but this is when Homer decides to keep Stampy.
I guess it wouldn't be right to tell Stampy. After he saved my life. And the boy seems to have some sort of relationship with him.
Thanks, Dad.
On the other hand, who's to say what's right these days? What with all our modern ideas and products? All right, we'll give the stupid elephant to the stupid animal refuge.
Yay!
It's the quick point, and the boy seems to have some sort of attachment. Yes. It's an incredibly funny joke made better by the animation.
Yeah, Homer is only just picking up on this. Yes. Really, like, I guess the boy likes him too.
And it is not only secondary, third or fourthiary to whatever his priority or feeling is about Stampy.
I also love that line, the empty argument, like, well, with all our modern ideas and products. That's,
and Homer would love to be part of the music scene, have his teeth made into piano keys.
There's too many great lines.
Yeah, I know.
This is the best episode.
I pitied Henry while watching this. I'm like, Henry, every line is great. How could you not capture everything? This is why we're an hour 37 in our recording right now.
Yeah. Well, so they drop off Stampy at the place. Mm-hmm. And
the refuge.
And that's one of the last lines that Stampy straight up kills those
Knocks him out.
That one guy is not moving. Elephant. Yeah,
I guess he could be unconscious. And then it's revealed that Homer and Stampy have more in common than we thought.
Well, animals are a lot like people, Mrs. Simpson. Some of them act badly because they've had a hard life or have been mistreated. But like people, some of them are just jerks. Stop that, Mr. Simpson.
I kept it that whole way because, like, he doesn't say words. Like, he's just like that. That's Homer could be shoving him for that joke, but it's way funnier that he is also headbutting him.
And for me, it was always way funnier to assume he's learning how to be a better jerk from an elephant. Like, he never thought to do this before.
That's a good reading. On that.
I love the line, some elephants are just jerks, because I also own an African animal, an African gray parrot. Oh. I've had him for 15 years. We get along wonderfully, but he's sort of like a cat in which a dog will be like, you're bigger than me. You're my boss now. And a cat doesn't care about you, but it's too lazy to get in trouble. A bird is like, I'm a bird doing bird shit. I don't care what you're up to. I'm not going to listen to you. I got plans, buddy. Because he's like halfway domesticated. I mean, parrots are not really domesticated, but it's interesting. But I think of that line when he's being bad. Some animals are just jerks. It's like, why won't you go to bed? Why won't you listen to me?
Jerk-ass dog.
That's beautiful.
But Scene fascinated me as someone who has been looking at buying animation cells, especially Simpsons animation cells, a cartoon I maybe know more better than anything else, and how tightly this dude is framed. I remember watching this, not remembering the Homer butting the head. Is there something wrong with the cropping on this? And just having to remember that this is someone zooming in on a cell they have to animate.
Yes.
And like everything around it. So when you watch it now in full screen, it looks like, I want my money back. This is cut wrong.
Yeah,
but that's the original framing of the joke.
Or it's also like to look on your HDTV and see the shadows of cell paint.
The shadows of the cells way more. Mm-hmm. It looks bad.
I love those imperfections.
Yeah, I love the physicality of cell animation.
It's what infuriated me when FX clipped it to make it widescreen. Like, no, guys, keep the aspect ratio.
Matt Groening hates it too. I don't know why they couldn't even listen to him. He owns The Simpsons.
No, why they couldn't do what every TV's already did, which is like expand like the ladder couple of inches on the side where like not a lot of the action is framed. But what a fuck this scene.
Yeah,
he would have been like way wider than he was before. But sorry, refugee fella.
Yes.
Stop talking. I'm three beers in.
So one last thing about this is Stampy would make a return. I'm going to say, I'm going to wag my finger at the Simpsons Wiki because they say like Stampy appeared in like five other episodes. Like, no, an elephant was there. It was drawn to be an elephant.
They credit
it is not supposed to be
Stampy.
Stampy
is like the background with like six elephants on a ball. Like, yeah, one of them was Stampy. Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
In Bart's dream, after he drinks all that water, he sees an elephant, and that's Stampy. Like, it's an elephant. It is not identified as Stampy.
I think Stampy comes back by name once or twice.
In the season 14 episode, Large Marge, where Marge gets breast implants accidentally.
I have not seen this.
And
Jesus
it was
Christ.
2002,
there's
it's
an entire song
not
about
that
her
new.
Breasts.
Yeah. Boy. But and it's actually animated by Jim Reardon. He's the director of the episode.
Okay.
It's a 2002 episode where Marge gets large breasts, but the other plot line is that Krusty has become very unpopular. Bart says that he should save Milhouse from a fake trampling from an elephant, and he got Stampy back to fake trample Milhouse, except Stampy then goes wild and puts Homer, Milhouse, and Bart in his mouth at the same time. And the only thing that distracts him long enough for Krusty to remember the safe word to get Stampy to let them go is Marge flashing her boobs.
Whoa.
And then Krusty says, look at those Magumbos. And then Stampy remembers that's his safe word. And it's a very...
just a great use of Marge, I think. Yes. It really gives her a lot of dignity,
yeah,
something to do.
Eh, I've seen worse episodes.
I have too, but I hate that one.
But in 2002, it makes me wonder, it was probably before they recorded the commentary for this, but just them going back to an old episode, like, we could just bring... this doesn't have to be any old elephant. It can be Stampy. Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was Reardon, like, saying, yeah, we should make this Stampy. I directed this other episode almost a decade ago.
And it was written by Ian Maxtone Graham. It was actually one of the first episodes of Al Jean's return to the series. Mm. But anyway, so that was the next appearance of Stampy, which, again, I can say, in my mind, I can't not think of Large Marge as a new episode, but it's like 15 years. It's getting into 15 years old.
There was enough time in between Large Marge and now than there was between Large Marge and Stampy.
There were only 8 years between Large Marge and Stampy.
God.
Yeah, but anyway.
We had so many more episodes to do. We want to do it forever, everybody. This has been Talking Simpsons. I have been your host, Bob Mackey. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. My other podcast is Retronauts. You can find that at retronauts.com, or just search for Retronauts in your podcast device, app, or what have you. Every Monday is a new classic gaming topic. We've done, personally with these guys, Chris and Henry, we've done Bart vs. the Space Mutants. We've done the Simpsons arcade game. We've done Bart's Nightmare. If you want to hear about bad and one good Simpsons game, check out those episodes. But I say, find a topic you like and download our episode. I guarantee you will like it. So that's Retronauts. Go to Retronauts.com or search for Retronauts in your podcast device.
And I am H-E-N-E-R-E-Y-G on Twitter. You can follow me there. But more importantly, and you have heard about this earlier in this podcast, I'm betting, wink, but did you know that you could have heard this earlier? Or maybe you did.
How do I do that?
Patreon.com/Talking Simpsons. Bob and I have started it up. You probably also heard this special episode about it. But in case you haven't, and you just listened to this one, Bob and I have started a Patreon just for Talking Simpsons, spun it off from the Laser Time Factory, but we are doing it to do more Simpsons things all the time to make it our full job, and we need your support. Do you want to hear episodes a week early? Do you want to hear us maybe do a Talking Critic and other cartoons and tons more exclusives? Would you want that? $5 a month or even $10 a month or $1,000 a month if you're so inclined.
There's
got to
be at least,
would really help. Yes.
Statistically, there's at least one multimillionaire listening to this.
But patreon.com/talking simpsons is where all the information is, including an amazing piece of art by Simpsons, a professional Simpsons artist, Nina Matsumoto. So please go there and check it out. At the very least, just to see that art. And then think about supporting it, because Bob and I quit our jobs and we need your support.
We're dead serious.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, patreon.com/talking simpsons. That's my plug.
But we are still part of the Laser Time family.
Yeah, LaserTimePodcast.com. Check it out. If you haven't already, I don't know what we can do.
We will never leave the Tyler Wilde Memorial Studio.
Certainly not. But anyway, yeah, and I mean, we were just on that farts episode of Laser Time. Give it a listen, folks.
Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with Burns of Air, a fantastic episode. See you then.
Wow, infotainment.